Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rod Gontos.
Rod Gontos.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you traveling today? You're always out and about the world on your Rod Life journey, your Rad Life journey.
You know what? We almost ran a repeat show today, but we had a great opportunity. So I am actually in Northern California. Answer your question. I'm in Northern California. I'm driving. I'm actually literally dropping off a car at rental.
Oh, geez.
Catch a flight back to Orange County from Oakland. Came up for some family stuff this last week and ended up flying on Veterans Day, which I want to just give a shout out to my wife, who is waiting for me at the terminal. This was 5 years ago is when we met.
Oh.
And so it's a little bit of an anniversary. So happy anniversary, honey. And
so she's a veteran of the Rad Life now.
Well, I'll give a little shout out of how we met. And just, if I may, for a minute, just kind of indulge myself.
All right.
It's brownie points time, right?
Okay. So, we got to get that in there.
Okay. So we actually met at a conference in Las Vegas. And as much as that sounds really exciting, it was not the kind of excitement that you think of when you come to Las Vegas, but it was still a very nice conference. It was a national organization called Rebuilding Together. So I'm giving a shout out to Rebuilding Together. It's about 300 affiliates around the country, and appropriate to today, they actually provide services for veterans, seniors, another one that's near and dear to our heart and the show, and low income. And they help them with repairs on their homes, things of that nature that usually, if they're older or they're veterans, they may have hardship in doing for themselves. It's a great organization. I urge everybody to look up for chapters in their own area. That's where we met. We met at a national conference for Rebuilding Together in Las Vegas 5 years ago. And so...
And you started a new foundation together here. How about that?
I think it's a foundation of being of service, which, again, seems very appropriate to the nature of the show today.
Well, you were just totally teeing me up here, because I'm gonna hit this one out of the park. We have a great guest with us today on the line as well, the Mayor Pro Tem of Mission Viejo, Greg Rass. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks, guys.
Can we call you Greg, or do we have to say Mr. Mayor?
Greg's fine.
Well, why this is so appropriate is not only is Greg hits the three themes that we talk about on this show. One is this aging baby boomer journey that we're all on together here. Greg is of a certain age, shall we say, that certain age range that I fall into and Rod falls into. And so we're always talking about reinvention. How do you reinvent yourself with all these extra years we've picked up, all this extra life we're going to have here? And then we talk a lot about veterans issues, and we also talk about senior housing. So we're going to hit all three of those today. And I welcome the mayor to our show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg, for being on the show. And again, I really look forward to meeting with you in person and having you on inside the studio. First of all, shout out to South Orange County, since we are both neighbors. I'm in San Clemente. And okay. I echo kind of Paul's sentiment here that, you know, you really personify what we're trying to do here on the show, which is talk about this extended journey, pursuit of passion, kind of, and then again being of service whenever possible. So if you wouldn't mind, take a minute and maybe give people a little background on you.
Absolutely. My age, which I have no problem saying, I'm 62.
Oh, ouch. We don't say the numbers here in this age, so we just allude to it here.
I feel 22, though. I feel great.
That's right.
Grew up in Arizona. My father was a World War II veteran, lived in Minneapolis. When he married my mother, they moved to a warmer climate, so they went from cold to hot.
Now, I got to interrupt you for 1 second here. I'll give a disclaimer here. Greg is our resident veteran on this network, I guess. Whenever we have veterans issues, we call Greg. And he was on this morning. I didn't know the two shows independently booked him. He was on our City Square Public Policy show. And in that show, I did a shout-out to my father, who was a World War II bomber pilot in the 8th Air Force, who died a couple years ago. And I know Greg lost his father, who was also a pilot in World War II this year. He flew, what, A-20 attack?
A-20.
Yeah. And so both his dad and my dad were flying over D-Day at the same time. My dad was high-altitude bombing. His dad was low-altitude, I guess, strafing runs or bombing or whatever. And now I got to interrupt because your dad was from Minneapolis. That's where my dad married my mom in Minneapolis.
Fantastic. Yeah, my father grew up there and actually met my mother when he's at Scott Field outside St. Louis. My mom lived on a farm with her father and brother in East St. Louis. They had a truck farm there. They had horseradish, of all things. And when my dad was going to train.
I thought you were going to say horse something else there for a while, but horseradish.
No, horseradish.
Okay.
And he made quite a good living there. And my mom would go to Catholic Mass on the base.
Oh, my God. We're Irish Catholics together here, too. Yeah. We're Catholics together. Wow.
And so after a few times of bringing donuts, my father finally got the nerve to ask my mom for a date, and so they set their first date for December 7th, 1941.
Oh my God, you're kidding! Pearl Harbor—that was their first date. Jeez.
Wow.
Well, it was supposed to be their first date, but after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, they shut down the base for all civilians coming in and out.
Sure.
So they had delayed their first date for about 3 weeks. So that's how they met. My father was with the 9th Air Force out of England, and then later moved into France. So I loved all his war stories as a pilot. So I wanted to be a military pilot ever since I was a kid. He'd take us to Luke Air Force Base for the air shows, and then I became a Marine Corps aviator in 1975.
Now, this is during the 70s when you and I kind of had different – I'm just 2 years younger than you are. I'm going to be 60 in a month here. And I was wondering, you know, Vietnam wasn't real popular at that time period, and I always say I think I would have gone, but reluctantly, had I been called up. But fortunately, I was just leaving high school, and then I was going to college, so I would have been able to defer out of much of that stuff. But you went to college and then chose to go into service.
I joined the officer program in 72 as Vietnam was starting to wind down. By the time I graduated from Arizona State in 75, got my wings in 76, obviously the war was over.
Yeah.
But I later served in combat at Operation Desert Storm, and then later I flew off to Abraham Lincoln and flew Operation Restore Hope in Somalia during the Black Hawk Down era.
Yeah.
And then later flew over Iraq and Operation Southern Watch. So I got about 75 combat missions in the F-A-18 Hornet.
And this was in the Marine Corps?
In the Marine Corps, yes.
Right. And then you weren't you a squadron commander here in, or whatever they call it, here in El Toro for some period of time?
Yes, at Marine Corps Air Base at El Toro, I was a squadron commander of the MFA 314, the Black Knights, same squadron that you see in the movie Independence Day. With he was a Black Knight 1, which I was Black Knight 1, from 93 to 94, I was a squadron commander. That's when I took my squadron. The Navy was short a squadron for the Lincoln Air Wing, Carrier Link, so they took our squadron, and we went to the Indian Ocean and provide air support over the Middle East there.
All right, so let's get to the reinvention part of it. Well, no, first, let's finish the story, and then I'll let Rod jump back in. But after all of this, you also got a stint in the White House, in the Clinton White House. Tell us about that.
Yes, when I was in 96 to 99, when I was lieutenant colonel, I was assigned to the White House by the Pentagon to be the deputy chief of staff of the military office, which is headquartered at the East Wing, and I worked with an Air Force colonel. Our job was to supply military support to the commander-in-chief, so Air Force One, HMX One, his helicopters, his Camp David's run by the Navy, his communications team run by the Army. So there's about 2,000 active duty members that support the commander-in-chief at any time. So we kind of support, we were the headquarters for those units at the White House, so whenever the president needed to travel, had to have his communication gear set up. We made sure that all was taken care of.
Tell us the quick story. You told it the last time you were on the show about your mother, because you're all conservative Republicans, and your mother, your poor mother, you bring him. She always wanted to come to the White House. This is during the Clinton years. She hated Clinton. And as I recall you telling the story, she was determined she was going to tell the president off after his public scandal.
Well,
and you're like, oh, my God, Mom, I work for the guy.
I didn't say she hated him, but she's more of a conservative, obviously a Catholic. It was against abortion, which she still passed.
Right.
And she goes, I need to meet the president. I need to tell him I'm against abortion. I go, Mom, you're at the White House. What's not causing any problems?
Be nice.
So President Clinton is so charismatic. We're walking down the colonnade between the West Wing and the mansion there, and here comes the president. Here comes my mom and my dad. I go, oh, God, here we got World War III going to start right
here.
Yeah,
and you, as I recall, you'd been trying to steer her away from him all day so that she wouldn't embarrass you here, right?
So as soon as he walks up, it is charismatic tone. He goes, hey, Colonel, who do we got here? I go, it's my mother. My mom just melted. Hello, Mr. President.
So there you go.
And she just melted. I go, Mom, what was that all about? She goes, well, he's the president. I can't embarrass the president.
She wanted to an hour before, but not during that.
Yes. But she died at 88 of Alzheimer's. And my father just passed, like you said, this year at 96. Yeah. He was he was great health all the way to the end, but he's a great American.
What do you think of that, Rod? Is that a story or what?
It's an amazing story. It's an unbelievably amazing story. I want to meet Greg now even more. And I am fascinated at that aspect of your mom. I mean, there's still respect for the commander-in-chief, regardless of whether you agree or disagree ideologically, politically with the man. It's still, you know, there's a respect to people who serve both in a civic capacity and in a military capacity, which is, you know, after all, today is about celebrating and honoring and giving gratitude to those who have served. And, you know, what's the saying say? You know, if it wasn't for the brave, we wouldn't be home of the free.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I do want to thank you for your service, Greg. And I want to ask you, because I know you're now involved in local politics, was that a bug that was, or was that an aspect of your, that was appealing to you from the beginning, or is it something that you acquired later, perhaps maybe with your stint at the involvement at the White House?
You know, I always was interested, and if I didn't go into military, I kind of want to pursue local politics in the Phoenix area. But when I got based here at El Toro, you know, I started my military career. But my stint at the White House, I worked closely with the Congress on military bills that came to the White House for signature. I worked closely with the Pentagon. I was a liaison between the Pentagon and the White House, and I really got interested in politics. I saw how President Clinton worked with Newt Gingrich behind the scenes. I mean, they worked really hard. You know, in public, they're adversaries, political adversaries. And similar to what we saw with Reagan and Tip O'Neill when Tip was the Speaker of the House. So I could see how he worked, you know, to get things done. And when I ran for political office and I won here in Mission Viejo last year to be a council member, and then my peers elected me as pro tem, mayor pro tem, you got to work with the other council members, you got to work with the commissions, and you got to work with the citizens. And that's what I picked up when I was at the White House. I saw how the politicals work together behind the scenes to get things done. And that's what I'm doing for the city of Mission Viejo.
But I got to interrupt again here, because he's being too modest, or maybe he doesn't want to delve into this, but he has the craziest story of how he got into politics here. Talk about reinvention. Reinvention's one of our themes, right, Rod? We're always talking about how...
Absolutely. Dare we ask, Greg, would you share the story?
Unbelievable story. Wait till you hear this.
No, I will share the story. It was 2012, the presidential elections. Obviously, we were pulling for Mitt Romney to win, and Barack Obama wins. And he's not really in favor with the military. We have issues with him. But I told my wife, I have to do something. I got to get back to Washington. I need to do something to serve my country once again. After the military, I served as an airline pilot, and then for JetBlue Airways, and then I was the president of a company in Anaheim. We imported and distributed auto parts throughout the country, but I had to do something. So I go, I'm going to run for Congress. I'm going to run for U.S. Congress.
For Congress, right. No experience, nothing. Never been elected. Why not start at the top here, you know?
Right, and so when I first started, I had no idea. You know, there's a pecking order here in Orange County.
Yes.
You know, you just don't show up and say, I'm running for Congress. And
everybody steps aside. Yeah, or says, oh, come on in.
The whole Republican hierarchy is going to say, oh, absolutely, Greg, we want you for Congress. And one thing that bothered me when I first started is they said, well, Greg, you know, we like you. You're a veteran, but you need to pay your dues.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to start at the city level. You got to start as good. I go, wait a minute. I paid my dues.
Got to be a planning commissioner and then a dog catcher and whatever else, yeah.
And they said, well, you got to come up with $2 billion and you got to do this and this. And I'm like, well, I think I just, all I need to do is get the most votes. I think that's. It's pretty basic math,
yeah, that's,
you know. If I get
remember, that's how
more votes,
works, right?
But
if
get,
I get more votes to my adversary, my political opponents, I can win. So
but now
I
get
the work.
Get how he gets his political strategy, though. How did you decide? You decided you're going to be a run for Congress, right? Never
yes.
done anything. And how did you set about doing this? What was your guide to doing this?
Well, I didn't know how to do it, and I didn't know anybody really in politics here at the local level or the state level, so I Googled how to,
Google.
How to run for U.S.
He Googled
Congress.
It. How to run for Congress, and that's how he built his campaign here in Orange County.
It's all there. You got to fill out a FEC, Federal Election Commission Form 1. I sent that in. I established my campaign, and then there's FEC 2. It's called testing the waters. You start trying to raise money. Once you get $5,000, you either got to commit, I'm going to run, or you're going to give the money back. So I committed to run. I did real well fundraising, but against the powerful establishment is really, really difficult because they would get the big money. But we did very well. We came in third mm-hmm. in the primary last June of 2014, just 2,000 votes shy of making it to the general election. But for somebody who just started out, we got 24% of the vote, which is really, really good.
For a total unknown, you must have just rocked the establishment when you walked in and suddenly
did
this.
You do realize, Paul, that this is just making it really harder and harder for me to basically say no to running next year.
Absolutely.
At City Council for San Clemente, right?
Rod,
did you set this up today?
That's why I'm trying to inspire you here. Rod has talked about, Rod obviously does interior design and has worked a lot with the historical. You're the president of the what? The Historical Commission?
San Clemente Historical Society. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, and there have been issues in San Clemente about old buildings and the fight over the Headlands project and that turned into all the, what is it, Outlet Mall and all this kind of stuff. And Rod, through all this, became very involved in city politics there and has increasingly eyed the idea of going forward. And he's like, but I don't know about politics. I wouldn't know how to do it. You just Google it. Follow Greg's example here.
Well, I'll sit down with you, Rod, after something I learned. It was like going to college. Very expensive experience, but I learned a lot. And you don't always get hired right out of college. So
no, exactly.
It was a great experience. I was on the street corners with my sign and my dog. I have a dog named Ronald Reagan. So, Golden Retriever, I'd stand there with my sign every morning, knock on doors and supermarkets, and then I start going to Kiwanis clubs, Elks clubs, wherever it was to get my name out there.
Yeah.
It's a district, but it's a huge district, Irvine and Tustin, Mission Viejo.
So you didn't make Congress. Maybe that was a little bit of an overreach first time out, but you
yeah,
were elected then.
Yeah, it was a bit of an overreach.
Yeah. But then you got into Mission Viejo politics and,
yeah.
and was able to win there.
I had name ID in the city, and I ran in the general election 2014. There was three seats open. Eight of us ran, and we got the most votes, and two incumbents were voted out, and
yeah.
Three brand new ones came in. One gal was turned out. So we won, and we got the most votes. And like I said, my colleague elected me to be the mayor pro tem. You do it for a year. Hopefully, I'll get elected to be mayor next year for 2016. So
what's it like
it
to reinvent yourself here? Here's this. How many years were you in the military? 20, 30 years or something?
30
years.
30.
And all of it. And then you had two other reinvention careers. You're a pilot for JetBlue, which I still think is one of the coolest airlines around. And then you had president of an auto parts company or something. All of that sounds like reinvention. And then what the heck? I'm going to go into politics here.
Well, my buddy owned this company where he brought in parts, and he goes, hey, I need someone to help turn this company around. And I go, I don't know, Jack, about auto parts. He goes, you're a Marine officer. You're over here. You can learn quick. So he brought me in, and we turned the company around. And And I was having the time of my life until a company out of Michigan came and bought us out. It's so hard in California with all the regulations rules to run a business, and they gave us an offer we couldn't refuse. So after that, I was without a job and did a little travel with my wife. And then, like I said earlier, after the 2012 election, I said, I got to do something, and I got to get to Washington. That didn't work out, but I love serving my city. You know, and I asked a guy who served before, I go, what do you do? He goes, you're like the cheerleader for the city. You got to get out there and promote your city. And that's what I've been doing. And it's well run. We just finished a 2-year budget. It's a balanced budget. We have a surplus. We keep $30 million in reserve for rainy day. And the city is doing very, very well.
And that rainy day may be coming with El Nino here.
That's right. And we were preparing for El Nino, cleaning out all the creeks and all the gutters and everything. So we're trying to be proactive instead of reactive.
Yeah. What do you think, Rod? Is this a story? Is this the epitome of what we're talking about or what? Well, I think we lost him here. Right. Let's do this. Let's go to commercial break. We'll establish our connection with Rod, and we'll come right back with the Colonel and current mayor of Mission Viejo, Greg Rass, right here on The Rad Life. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, did we reestablish our connection with Rod up in the great northern part of the state here?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, Paul and Greg. I was about to actually give a commendation to JetBlue, which is who I'm flying today.
There you go. See, it all fits together.
You like those little TVs in the back of the chair in front of you?
No, I am not on the plane yet, but we walked into their terminal, and we're flying out of Oakland. I love that terminal, and we fly out of Long Beach, which,
yes.
Again, if I have a preference, and you know they're not paying any of our bills, but if I have a preference, usually they are my carrier of choice. So, but I was, as I was saying before, I lost the signal, or maybe I was interrupted by those who did not want to have me run.
Yeah, I think they cut you off here. They cut our cable here. Well, I love JetBlue. I love JetBlue because of the extended legroom. Greg's about the same size. We both seem like we're about the same size. We're in our over 6 feet here, and which is, I don't know how you became a fighter pilot with your height here.
I met the requirements by 1/8 of an inch.
1/8 of an inch.
I had to scrunch down when they were taking my measurements. I was very close to flying helicopters, but I got through with my height, and I initially flew the F-4 Phantom II. And then I finished my career flying the F-18 Hornet.
Well, if you want to have a good time, get him to start telling stories of those days. Or we would eat up the rest of the show and three more with the stories that I've heard him tell at a couple visits here to Orange County here. So, but what epitomizes is the reinvention aspect, right, Rod?
You're right. No, absolutely. I mean, I will just say one thing, too, is I came to the United States. We immigrated. I was... I had signed up for the Selective Service Act under Reagan when we were going through our immigration process, and then we finally moved. And one of my desires actually had been, but I was too old at one point when it kind of dawned on me, was to actually go in, go into the military, into the services, and the one thing I knew I was going to pick from was actually try to get into the Air Force or sort of the Air Force Reserve. So
there
it's actually
go.
Very, very interesting, yeah. And the closest I came to actually having my 6'1" frame basically be jammed into a chair is my little Alfa Romeo Spider that the chair has never been in a locked position in because it's so freaking small.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, but no, the reinvention factor is huge. And I think it's what we try to emphasize over and over and over is that it seems almost counterintuitive for me that people, as we get older, as we get to be so seasoned and so have so much to offer, that society either tries to put us into some sort of outlined framework of how we can contribute. I mean, Greg was saying, you know, well, you can't run for office. You got to pay your dues.
Yeah.
I had that same thing be told to me locally in San Clemente when I tried to run for planning commission. Well, no. You can't just assume you're going to get on planning commission. You need to do that, you know, three times before we bless you by actually selecting you.
Right.
You know, kind of thing. And I find that to be very un-American, to be honest with you. It's very, very insular, very non-participative. And when it comes to age, we find that even amplified more. Where it's like, oh, you know, thank you very much, but now you have nothing else.
Well, look at this year's election. You look at some of the people that are in either California politics or elsewhere. Look at Governor Brown, whether you love him or hate him. He was the youngest governor in history. Now he's the oldest governor in history. And the assumption is he won't run again simply because of his age, even though he was overwhelmingly elected. Would we ever elect somebody like Ronald Reagan again that was in their 70s? What do you think, Greg?
I think so. You know, I think the 70s or the former 50s, I feel great at my age. I really want to get kudos out. I don't remember Joe Scarborough, who is
yeah.
Money Joe Show now.
Yeah.
I think he won during the Gingrich Revolution of 94. And I remember listening to him on an interview, and they said, well, how'd you run for Congress? He goes, well, I went out on a street corner with a sign, and I started talking to people. And he said the same thing. It's how many votes you can get.
Yeah.
And I always remembered that. And if I said, if I'm ever going to run for Congress, I'm going to follow his pattern. I followed it. I didn't win, obviously, but it was a great way of just meeting people, talking with people. And with my military experience as a veteran, my business experience, I thought I had all the credentials, which I did, to serve my district. And I went for it.
Was age ever an issue? You're not
no.
that old. You're not 80, 90,
no,
or whatever.
No,
but.
No. I think presidents can be.
So how has it been, Greg? How has that been
experience?
In terms of,
yeah.
Is it what you expected? Has there been any surprise? How's it compared to being serving in military capacity and now in the civil capacity?
It's a lot slower to get things done.
You think?
Yeah. When I was in the service, you grab some sergeant, you know, get it done. It's done, you know, within minutes. The military was a great training ground, but in politics, you got to have your consultants to look at an issue. Then you got to do community outreach, and you have to have a meeting. And because we're trying to rejuvenate to one of our aging shopping centers here, and I thought, you know, I could get this thing going, but you got to get developers involved. You got to obviously
public hearings. Owners, yeah, right.
Public hearings.
Yeah.
It takes a lot longer, but I've learned over the year that I've been in office. I've learned how it takes, but I'm trying to expedite things, get it done. And we're already going out with an RFP to try to get this shopping center, which is right across from our city hall, redeveloped and make it get it right for the 21st century.
Yeah, that's been an old center there with the bowling alley and all that there. And
so do you find any of the experiences that you did acquire by being in the military come to play? Have you been able to use that? I mean, I understand that, you know, the red tape and the bureaucracy, and it's infuriating at times to actually see that happen, but have you been able to bring some of that to bear maybe and kind of help you out?
I met with the Chamber of Commerce of our city, so I met all the business owners and talked with them, and every Tuesday morning we have a breakfast, and I just sit there and listen. Once in a while they let me say a few things, but I listen, see what's on their mind, and then I sit down with the service organization. I'm a member of the Rotary Club of Mission Viejo and some of the veterans groups, American Legion, VFW Hall. And I've learned and just absorb all this and then use my leadership skills that I learned in military and business to bring to the city to get things done. And like I said, we had a very ambitious agenda for 2015. We passed everything we need to get done. And you just don't go up there and vote on it. You meet with the people. You talk with the people. You get the support. You need three votes, obviously, in a five-person council to get things done. So there's a lot behind the scenes you deal with, and then you bring up the issue and get it passed. So that's what I learned in the military. I used my leadership skills as a squadron commander, my leadership skills in business, my leadership skills in the cockpit for JetBlue to get things done and get things done right the first time.
You know, we've speculated on this show about whether or not more of our leaders should have military experience. And as we've said, you know, I came out of an era when military service was not too popular. In fact, it was discouraged. It wasn't seen as something everybody had to go through. You did everything you could to get out of it. And we've had several presidents that either did or almost got out of it here that didn't serve now in a row. And yet I suddenly seeing, because of the conflicts that you went through in Desert Storm and whatnot, we're seeing Congress people being elected who now have that military experience again. I'm thinking of, there was a congresswoman in Iowa, Jody somebody, and she was, and then there was Tammy Duckworth, and I think Wisconsin and some others, and or wherever she was. Is that going to change the way politics is done if we get more military people in there? Is that going to shake things up? Is that going to make this thing move faster, or is it deeper than that?
I think it's deeper than that. I see right now in U.S. Congress that it has the least amount of veterans, obviously, since before World War II.
Yeah, right.
I think that plays a role, and I think it affects the president we have now. He does not have any experience. You know, the way he pulled so quickly out of Iraq, and it breaks my heart, all the hard-fought battles, and then we pull out, and now it's a total disarray. But, you know, I think I fought in Desert Storm. You know, if you're going to fight in a war, it was a 39-day air war followed by a three-day ground war. It was over.
Yeah, shock and awe, right.
Yeah, President George H.W. Bush, he did it right. You know, he gave everything over to General Schwarzkopf. He said, this is what I want. We need to get Kuwait back and give it back to him and get the hell out of there. And that's what he did.
And yet he was criticized by some people, including perhaps people who served under him, Rumsfeld and Cheney, for not going further and not continue. You know, we got him on the run. Let's just go run the deck here or something. He said, no, this is not what we got in for. Let's not overreach here.
That's true. And for history will show you that President Clinton was very anti-Saddam Hussein. He thought for sure, and when I was at the White House, we thought for sure they had weapons of mass destruction. Hmm. We knew he had biological weapons and chemical weapons because he used them on the Kurds. We did not know. We figured he did have a nuclear program. Obviously, it showed he did not, or at least it was all moved out before our troops got in there. But it was a tough war, and I think Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Cheney were the hawks, and you see it from George H.W. His new book that's coming out, that he thought they're really too aggressive.
Yeah, he's very critical of them. And it reminds me of the same criticism that was leveled against who was the Secretary of Defense during McNamara, during the Vietnam era, in a Democratic administration, again, who came out of Ford Motor. Sometimes we think that if you hire military people, they will be more militaristic, and it seems like the ones who are the most militaristic, like McNamara and Cheney and Wolfowitz and all these, are the people who never served.
Right, and you saw George Bush give, across my mind, the name of the general in Iraq.
We'll come up with
it. At the end for the surge, he gave it over to him, and he went
Petraeus. Petraeus.
General Petraeus, right. And the surge is very effective. But then again, I don't think we had the troops after the war to contain all the factions in there. And, you know, if you really studied that country, I think the younger Bush probably wouldn't have done what he done because of the religious factions within country that for years, for thousands of years, you know, fought each other.
What do you think? You were at Rod, you wouldn't know this, but Rod was actually born, I don't know if you were born there, but you were raised in Iraq, right?
I was born in Baghdad. My mom is half Iraqi, half Lebanese, and Lived there probably about three or four years before we relocated. My dad's a civil engineer. We relocated to Kuwait back in 71, 72, through a couple of years of Abu Dhabi when there was nothing but sand. So, yeah, no, I'm very familiar with that area. My grandparents lived in Iraq, both sides, my mom's and my dad's, for a long time until they moved to Chicago on my dad's side, and my mom's side went to Lebanon. And, no, I agree. There's always been this thing that I think we suffered from as the United States, and I think European countries suffered from earlier, you know, a century or so before, which is that there's a lot of nuances and a lot of factions and a lot of stuff like that. You cannot just pick up in 30 minutes of a summary report or an hour report thing. You kind of have to really delve deeper than that. And I think in many ways we've inherited a lot of those issues. And I think by the time we came to Petraeus being there and, you know, another surge, I think even the sentiment in this country basically had gotten tired. And yeah, so, you know, hindsight being 2020, it sort of anticipated where we find ourselves today. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of people on both sides and innocent stuff, you know, it's just war is war.
Well, rather than too far down the rabbit hole, I was going to take it another direction if I could and just say, what do we do with all these veterans now? These people didn't expect to serve for 10 years or whatever. Right. We didn't think we were going to be in any of these conflicts as long as we've been. We're asking, we've run people through two, three tours, four tours and stuff. And as we read on this show, you had, who was the gentleman you had on earlier that has a veterans group and he helps work with veterans?
Josh, and I'm missing his last name, but Josh Newman, I think, is his name. And he has a nonprofit called From Armed Force to Workforce. And they're helping veterans basically re-assimilate into jobs in Orange County.
And he talks about how many of them are unemployed. We hear about how many of them have post-traumatic stress, how many of them commit suicide, how many of them end up homeless. I mean, this is horrible. We're asking these people to do the extraordinary, and then they come back and they're sort of thrown out on their own, and they're not doing too well.
I personally also, I'm the president of the executive board of a group called Patriots and Paws, and we help the veterans match them up with the companion dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a golden retriever, and we were sitting around in a session talking to veterans, and this one guy saying how he's on his third wife, and that just failed. And I go, you
need to get a dog.
totally loyal. And we got him a dog, and oh my God, this guy's the happiest guy around now. He has a golden too, and they're just totally loyal, and they really help these veterans get over some of the issues they saw in combat.
Yeah.
And it's something, you know, I'm passionate about, to help veterans, and there's so many groups now, not like it was after Vietnam, you know, they're just thrown out to the wolves when they got back, but there's a lot of support groups for our veterans and a lot of employers that love to pick up veterans to work because they know they have a skill that they can use. And it's overwhelming. It's really, really good to help our veterans. Yes, a lot of them still have a lot of problems, but there's so many groups out there that are helping our veterans. And on Veterans Day today, I'm proud of the way businesses, like Home Depot now, has parking spots up front for veterans.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah. You know how you have it for the disabled? Well, they have parking spots for veterans. They get a 10% discount on anything they buy. It's pretty cool. And you're seeing a lot of that in our community here in Orange County.
Well, I'm going to give one other shout-out to another group that I know Rod's a big supporter of, which is Working Wardrobes. We run a lot of their spots here on the network. And they just sent me this thing today, this press release for something called VetNet, Operation Employment. And they're trying to raise, I think, $100,000 by the end of this year through donors and corporate partners to come up with a scholarship program to help fund a full suite of career training program for vets. You know,
I believe Barry Goldwater's daughter runs that.
Really? Okay, I didn't know
that. Yeah, Goldwater.
I think you're right.
She runs that, and she gets wardrobes and everything for veterans, get them ready for interviews, and make them look stiffy. That, you know, when you're wearing a nice suit, you're feeling good, nice haircut, you feel good inside, and
exactly.
What she does to help our veterans. So it's really heartwarming to see all these organizations helping veterans, and I can't say enough. Go ahead.
I'm going to give another shout out. Sorry, Greg. I'm going to give another shout out to a gentleman by the name of Richard Brown that's in San Clemente, Freedom Warriors, that we also have had a show with, who
owns Biggie's Burgers down there, and he's helping veterans actually transition into owning their own businesses.
Teaching them how to run a fast food restaurant and how to
set. No, it wasn't fast food.
I'm sorry, it was
like
quick dining or something. Yeah, right. He doesn't want to call it fast food, but it's basically owning a hamburger joint. How do you get these businesses? How do you get a franchise? How do you qualify? And how do you learn how to be ready to run these businesses? And it's amazing.
So Greg, tell me about your book. It's a very interesting title. What made you want to write a book, and where did the title come from?
Well, my book is Nine Lives of a Fighter Pilot, numero nine, Lives of a Fighter Pilot. I started just writing jotting down some notes about my life for my grandkids, let them know what Grandpa did. and when I started writing, I noticed, I came close in jet aircraft to dying nine times.
Wow.
Or eight times. I'm in my ninth life. And so I go, this might be a good book. So I wrote the book, and everything goes to the Semper Fi Fund and the Patriots and Paws. All profits go to them. So this third printing's done real well, and we're now making it into a screenplay. So if they let me have Bradley Cooper play me in the movie, I think it's
all's good. Yeah, why not? He did American Sniper, and he's ready for the role here. Okay,
right.
So where do we get the book? Amazon, I'm assuming, and other places.
You go Amazon, Barnes and Noble, anywhere it's on the internet, or you can ninelivesofafighterpilot.com, the number nine lives of a fighter pilot.
Well, obviously we had you on, and we had to give all this shout out stuff for your service and for the fascinating life story you've had and the reinvention you made. I want to hit the final third topic for our last 15 minutes here on the show, which is senior housing. Mission Viejo has got some senior housing, and I know every city has got to be thinking about what are we going to do with all of us, whatever we are, older people, aging in place people here. I'm in 10, 20 years, are we all going to be moving into some assisted living or nursing facilities or what? I don't know. Where is it going?
Well, in our city, we have
transportation, too.
Transportation. Rod always talks about that. How are we even going to get around if there's no buses and other things here to move us around if we can't drive anymore here?
Well, in our city, we have two 55-plus communities, Costa del Sol and Palmilla, and we have tons of veterans in there that I work with. And we're really working to get we're losing a lot of the millennials because they can't afford housing.
Absolutely.
Here in Orange County, and we're working, and we just built a nice apartment complex. But I'd like to get those that are just getting into the workforce into, like, a condominium to start. And so I'm looking to see if we can get some condominiums put up here.
And that's a problem. As we've talked about, the Orange County Business Council has done a report. They've been on several of our shows talking about this lack of housing in Orange County. We're just run out of room to build, and we're still growing and booming, and people want to move here. It's California. It's a growing economy. It's all this high-tech stuff happening. But how do you get young people to move in when prices are at an all-time high and their debt load is at an all-time high, hundreds of thousands of dollars?
And young people that grew up in those communities, not even just coming in from elsewhere.
Right. So we're losing, and the report says we're one of the few places losing millennials. And if you carry the logic forward, we might end up being one large leisure living here. And the baby boomers don't want to leave like me. I should be making room for this next wave and moving somewhere else, and I ain't moving. I'm working longer, living longer, and staying in my house longer.
Well, the problems we're seeing also with the apartments, they're not cheap either.
No.
You get a little two-bedroom for $2,500.
How does that help? You know? Yeah.
And that's so if we get them into a condominium as a starter home, and then they can move up into a single-family home at some point, obviously when they get more established in their careers. So I've learned that obviously talk with the millennials, and we match them up with the seniors on kind of sharing their stories. And there's a lot of seniors that did well in business that are helping the veterans and the millennials find housing.
Well, this is what Rod's obviously transitioned his whole career into, is this aging in place idea. And I don't know that many cities or all the cities are ready for this aging population that's going to have a whole new set of needs in their 80s and 90s here. Do you guys think about that in Mission Viejo? Any workforces, task forces, ideas on how to deal with this aging in place population?
Well, what we have here, we have several single family or single level or the one level homes, and they've made it, they call them six beds. They've expanded them into six bedrooms, and people run these homes, and they have six of the seniors that no longer can care for themselves 100%. They're more of a assisted living facility.
Kind of a group home type of thing in a residential
neighborhood. Like a boarding care, yeah.
Yeah, and I've been in them because you've heard the stories of elderly abuse and things like that. And I made sure...
We've talked about it on this show at length, yeah.
That these six beds really take care of the people. And the ones I've seen and the owners that I've met are very, very good. And I just want to make sure that our elderly that cannot take care of themselves are well taken care of and not abused.
But how do you deal with the community? Rod, tell the story of how, you know, we're seeing this with sober living homes and with all sorts of group homes for seniors and other things, and people say, oh, that's a great idea, but not in my neighborhood. You're not putting a bunch of them in my neighborhood where they're going to wander around and scare the kids or cause problems. I mean, there's all this misconception. It's going to drive down property values and whatnot. So how do you deal with that? Is that alternative contingency expand?
It's community outreach. You got to let the community know that, you know, someday they're going to be in that role, and they'll need to be cared for. So it's just talking to the community and letting them know that this is necessary. We just don't put them out the pasture and throw them in some home way out in the outskirts. We like to keep them within the community, and some of the senior facilities we have here also. They have organizations that keep their minds alert. They have activities all day, so they're not just sitting there and watching TV or just sitting in their easy chair. We get them up and out, and we have a community center, Mission Viejo, a senior center called the Murray Center, and every day there's six, seven different activities for the seniors to participate in. And we do have transportation to get them to and from these different places, and we work with transportation companies to make sure that we can get the seniors out of their homes.
Now, you're going to open Rod up to tell you, I'm going to warn you here, he's going to tell you his pet peeve about senior centers. You ready?
Go ahead, Rod.
No boomers want to go to a senior center. They want to go to a wellness center. It's an issue of packaging, and we'll talk about it more extensively later, but it's kind of funny. The end profile user is different, and I think we're going through a transition in the industry for a lot of reasons, including the fact that people are staying healthier like yourself, older, healthier, you know, active, involved, and, you know, sitting in a big room with laminated tabletops is not exactly their idea of an engaged social environment. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, and a lot of communities that basically jump to that opportunity are going to garner a lot of these people that maybe have a little bit deeper pockets financially and are looking for a place to retire and spend the rest of their lives. I do want to ask you, since it is Veterans Day, what, if any, activities are being planned for Mission Viejo?
You set that up. They got one coming up in an hour here, I think.
Yeah, 2:00 here at our community center. We're having a Veterans Day celebration, we call it, and we have our Congresswoman Mimi Walters coming, and our city officials, and we adopted the Headquarters Battalion, 1st Marine Division Active Duty Force at Camp Pendleton. We're going to have the Colonel Nugent, their CO there, and the Sergeant Major, and it's going to be about an hour-long program.
How about that? And Rod won't be back in time. He'll be still in the air, up in his jet blue seat, watching those TVs, thanking the captain up there. All right,
I flew that route many times up to Oakland.
Did you? So I just think you epitomize all three issues that this show tries to deal with. One, that as we get older, it doesn't have to be a linear life where you go to college, get married, work, retire, die. You can reinvent yourself many times along the way here, as you've proven. And the fact that we have two challenges, I think, facing cities today here that Rod talks a lot about. And one is this returning veterans population. We don't know what to do with them, nor do we know what to do with the millennial population anymore because they can't afford to stay in the cities where we raise them. But more importantly, us, not just our parents anymore, but us. Where are we all going to end up 20 years from now here?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Well, Greg, I do want to offer, if there's anything I can do professionally in that capacity, please do not hesitate to reach out. It is something that is very near and dear to my heart. I have been in South County since 87, and my folks live about 6 miles away from me. My sister and her family live about 3 miles away from me, so this is very much a multi-generational sort of commitment. And so if there's anything I can do at all, please let me know.
Well, I appreciate what you do. And my father and mother originally were in an assisted living facility in Phoenix. And after my brothers and sisters, we went in there, and it was right out of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where everything was bolted, and they went and get their pills, and we're like, we got to get Mom and Dad out of here. This is not right. So we found a beautiful assisted living facility in Glendale, actually run by Romanian immigrants, and it's really big in Arizona. They're really getting into this, where they're building these beautiful homes, and it housed 10 seniors, and they did just a fantastic job. They have a huge dinner table where they all come to dinner, and they have activities for them. So we're so glad to get them out of that one place and into the new place.
Well, I went through the same thing with my parents when they passed away over the last few years, and it was horrifying to see what happens to these people, your loved ones, in the last stage of their life here. They're really just warehoused to die, and at an exorbitant price. I mean, it's not even cheap. You're spending all their life savings to keep them just in diapers and bolted into a bed somewhere here. It's horrible. Well, hopefully that's through this show and others we can talk about some of these issues, because I don't think the baby boomers want to face any of this stuff. We ain't getting old. How old do you feel, Greg? I still say I'm 25 or 30 or something here. I still dress and look like it. Rad's always laughing. I mean, did you stop buying shorts in 1975 here? I think I did.
Well, when I became a politician, I had to go get a whole new wardrobe because my wife wouldn't let me wear that old 1976 suit that I bought in Korea.
With
the bell bottoms and the Corfam shoes, you know.
I'm with you.
And so a skinny tie. So she took me to Macy's, and we got a whole new wardrobe, and so I'm looking a bit dapper.
We're not even willing to admit that, you know, physically. I look in the mirror and I say, "Who's that old man? Where's my picture here?" I picked up my friend the other day. I hadn't seen him in like 10 years. We grew up together as kids, and he flew in the airport, and I drove right by him. And I had to go around the circle again. He said, "Well, you son of a gun, you drove right by me." I said, "Oh, my God, I was looking for you, and I saw your dad instead." I saw your dad and drove right by you.
That all happens to all of us.
I think so.
Well, my high school, we had our 40th reunion a couple of years ago in Arizona, and, oh, my God, it was so fun to get everyone together. We never even talked about the 40 years that went by. All we talked about our days in high school and the fun we had. And, you know, so many years had passed, but it was so fun just to get everyone back together and tell stories from high school. And it is pretty cool. So I think our generation is going to be around for a long time.
Well, and we're going to redefine whatever this thing is that they want to call old age or aging. Whatever we're going to call it, we're going to call it something different. You know, we were hippies and we were yuppies and I don't know, whatever we're going to be now, but there's some new phase coming.
So far.
We're uppies.
So, I agree. I think you guys have really, and I've said this to you, and I've thanked you, Paul, for it, and I'll thank Greg as well. You know, you guys have really paved the way for us Gen Xers or millennials.
Rod's about 10 years younger than us here. He's a wannabe. He's a wannabe baby boomer.
But you guys have really made it possible to do stuff for us to actually consider things very normal and very much matter of fact, because you had to deal with them first. And I think you are going to have a major, major impact on this thing we call aging, or this phase of life. You know, when I started doing aging in place in 2008, we used to call it seniors,
right?
And they start calling it active adults, and now
it's us.
Older.
It's whatever it is.
It's older adults, and we actually had the lady there who said, you know, why are you trying to define it? I'm just who I am. I'm not a category that basically you need to, you know, form demographics and somehow market to. I am that individual, and I think that's exactly what you guys are going to provide here. Is it's not going to be where we package everybody, whether it be in an assisted living or in a group that we market to. I think it's the individuality factor, which has been very much characteristics of boomers forever, is going to translate into this phase of life as well.
Aren't we all aren't we all individuals? That's what the baby boomers, more than anything. We weren't going to do what our parents did. We were going to be individuals, whatever that meant here, and we've certainly done it our way here. Well, Well, we're pretty independent.
You know, yeah. We like doing things. Yeah. But when I went to paint my one of my bedrooms the other day, I'm not that young kid anymore that can paint a room in an hour.
Exactly.
Your few muscles hurt the next day.
I got to leave with this last thing. Here's something funny. We got like a minute or two to go here. But you guess what the mayor, who has reinvented himself multiple times, guess what else he does with his little bit of spare time as just a hoot, just to go out and meet people in his neighborhood, Rod? He's an Uber driver. He's an Uber driver. He signed up to be an Uber driver.
It's funny, Rod. It was my son. My wife took my keys one day. I called my son for a ride. He goes, "Just call Uber." I go, "What's Uber?" And I took Uber. I met the driver, and I go, "I got to do this. This way, I take people around my community. I learn as a politician now what's important to these people. I don't tell them I'm mayor.
Yeah.
I'm the undercover mayor.
Taxicab confessions. They tell everything to the taxicab driver.
Yeah. And I've learned so much. So I do it 2-3 days a week for a couple hours, and it's really, really pretty cool. Plus, you make a few extra bucks.
And plus, you're on the cutting edge of technology here. We're not a bunch of old farts.
We have a gentleman by the name of Roger Merrill. I don't know if you know him. He used to own a paint shop in San Clemente on El Camino Real. And he is one of those guys that's also like constantly reinventing himself, and he's in his 70s. Well, his latest thing is doing like basically video podcasts.
Yeah, right.
I have a feeling maybe we should team you as the Uber driver with Roger, the videographer, and we might have ourselves a local show here.
I think it's the local version of Taxicab Confessions. They can walk around and tape people in the back of his car here. All right. Well, thank you both for a fascinating talk on Veterans Day. We covered a lot of ground here, but I think it just proves again that whatever's coming, it ain't going to be anything like we've ever seen before. We're going to reinvent the world.
And isn't that grand, right?
Exactly. All right. How do people reach you guys? Greg, if they want to contact the mayor, do they just call Uber and get you? Or?
Find me on the City of Mission Viejo website. You can get a hold of me that way. All my information is right there. So I really appreciate having me on the show today and sharing some stories.
All right, thanks so much. And Rod, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, I did before that. Greg, I do want to extend a personal invite for you to come back. When do you start your term as mayor?
We have the installation probably the first of the year, so January.
Okay. So I would love to have you back on the show at the beginning of the year, and we can talk about a little bit more of those stuff that is sort of local to our area and what innovative stuff is happening. I think it's wonderful that you guys are teaming millennials with seniors or active or older seasoned professionals. It's a wonderful think outside the box approach. So I just want to put that out there.
And I'll share my secrets and get you on San Clemente City Council.
There you go. That's what he really wants to know. He wants to learn how to do this. Okay. All right. Thanks guys. Yeah. We got to go.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks for your service, Greg. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.